Good morning, brethren and sisters. I'm sure that Nehemiah knew from that night visit, which we discussed earlier in the week, that this was going to be an uphill task, the reviving of the existence of the Jewish Commonwealth and the building of the walls. He'd gone round in a very doleful scene at night and looked at the mounds and mounds of rubbish. From the first couple of verses of this chapter, we read the scorning of the opposition they received, and they made reference to reviving the stones out of the heaps of the rubbish. So the chances are there weren't even stones visible, as we might imagine, a broken down wall. This was just a scene of chaos, just mounds and mounds of rubble. So Nehemiah would have known this was going to be quite a task that he'd got himself into. He would have known that he was hoping to revive the Jewish state, to revive the city of Jerusalem with a captive workforce lifted just straight out of the Medo-Persian Empire. These were people with no social standing. They were effectively, for the most part, I suppose, slaves. And he was hoping to build the walls with these people. What he may not have predicted was the scale of opposition from every quarter, which we read of in this chapter. He might not have expected that the opposition from Sanballat and Tobiah and all the Arabians would have escalated from just mere scorn and contempt to full-scale opposition. There were threats of them raising up an army to prevent the Jews from taking this any further. What we find from this chapter, as we found from some of the earlier chapters, is that Nehemiah's first resort is to turn to God in prayer. This is his first instinctive reaction. In verse 4, he says, "Hear, O our Elohim, for we are despised, and turn their reproach upon their own head, and give them for a prey in the land of captivity." This was one of the secrets, I believe, to Nehemiah's success. He recognized that this was not his work, although he was leading the work. He knew that it was God's work that he was doing. It was God's work, it was God's city, it was God's people, and therefore his enemies were God's enemies. And thus we can understand why his words were maybe what we might not expect, talking about bringing the reproach upon their own head. I think that it helps us sometimes as we go through scripture if we draw the distinction between our own enemies and God's enemies. David said about God's enemies, he hated them with a perfect hatred, whereas his own enemies, such as Saul, he was very kind towards and very magnanimous towards. I think we would be helped if we drew ourselves that simple division between God's enemies and our own enemies. But this being God's work, these foes of the Jews were the foes of God's work. So if we ourselves go about our work with the object of serving ourselves, getting our own ambitions, our own objectives, I think we will find ourselves, for the most part, sadly disappointed. If we go about our work, whatever it may be, with a higher purpose of trying to please God, come what may, whatever might confront us, like Nehemiah, we won't be so perturbed, we won't be so upset when things don't always go according to plan. Verse 6, "So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof," which is saying that it was built halfway up. How was it done? "For the people had a mind to the work." In many ways, I think this is the catchphrase of the chapter, "The people had a mind to the work." A great exhortation just in those few words. We know that the whole of Nehemiah is a strong exhortation to us in our ecclesial lives, because we're all here building. We're not building a wall, but we're building up the house of God. We're living stones. And so, here again, we find a powerful exhortation question for us is, do we have that mind to the world? There's that worldly saying, united we stand, divided we fall. We've got to be unified. We've got to have first pure, then peaceable. We've got to have the unity of doctrine. And moving on from that, we've got to have the unity of purpose and the unity of resolve and determination to go forth in the doing of God's work. And we must always abound in God's work. We must have that focus towards constantly striving towards the mastery of all things. And we must think also about the word mind. Our mind has to be in it. Our minds must be kingdom focused. We remember that Paul says it's to them that look for him, Christ, that he will appear the second time without sin unto salvation. He said that there awaited him a crown of righteousness, and not to him only, but to all them that love his appearing. Our hearts must be directed towards the coming kingdom, where there is no vision, the people perish. We find a compounding of the problem, though things don't get better as we move on through the chapter. Things start to get progressively more difficult. And we've got a long list there of Sanballat, Tobiah, the Arabians, the Ammonites, the Ashdodites. All these people had seen with dismay the progress of the building. Do you know, sometimes we can find that we might have a trial and it has plagued us and we feel we can't take any more. We're much cast down through manifold temptations. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes, we can find at that low point another trial might hit us. This is in harmony with what we read in John about the pruning of the tree. Jesus says that any branch which brings forth fruit, he prunes it, cuts it back, that it might bring forth more fruit. So we must not be overly perplexed if we find that we find many different problems which hit us from all directions all at once. This has sometimes been the lot of the people of God throughout their generations. And we read in verse 8 that there was a conspiracy to come to fight against Jerusalem. So it moves up a notch. This is not just antagonism and scorn. This is moving up to full-scale opposition. What is Nehemiah's reaction? Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. Once again, his first reaction is to turn to God in prayer. And in that verse, we have the important blend. You have the important blend of prayer and watchfulness with faith and action. Brother Robert said, if God be your guide, you may go ahead without fear, but he won't guide if you don't go. We must press on. Here Nehemiah made his supplication to God in prayer, but at the same time he didn't just sit supinely and wait for God to accomplish everything. It was him who was responsible for bringing this work forward. We remember that God said to Moses on the shores of the Red Sea, there was water in front of them and there was an advancing Egyptian army behind, closing in on them quickly. What did God say to Moses? Wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak unto the children of Israel that they go forward. Sometimes even when forward doesn't look like the direction we want to go, we've got to press on. So then verse 9, we have that combination, those two prominent themes, in many ways the two most common recurring themes throughout the book of Nehemiah, of prayer and action, trusting God and work and labour in the work of God. So we built the wall. Now the next challenge comes from a different direction again. Judah said, the strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall. In some ways, maybe this was the most difficult. We can expect opposition from the world. We know that the world is our enemy, but sometimes we're not so maybe prepared for receiving opposition from within the brotherhood. And a negative attitude is something which really can be deflating. It can have a very deflating effect on the work of the truth. Our attitude should rather be like Paul's: I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. And Paul is told that there's nothing, neither height nor depth nor any other creature, should be able to separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus. We see other threats in verse 11 to 12, and it's worth noting just once again that his prayer is to God. And he takes action again. Interesting in verse 13 what he decides to do. Shows that it wasn't just blind action on his part. He was using his head and trying to work sensibly and faithfully in God's service. It says, therefore set I in the lower places behind the wall, and on the higher places I even set the people after their families with their swords, their spears and their bows. But you'll note that the word "and" is in italics. They had to put it there to make any sense out of it. In the lower places behind the wall and on the higher places. The higher place is, I believe, not very well translated there. The word "higher place" in the original just means shone upon and burnt by the sun. So height is not implied in the word, although you could understand why a translator might think that the higher part of the wall would be more exposed to the sun. High places are, as we know, more generally exposed. But we're talking not about higher places. We're told that it's the lower places. He's set in the lower places. I believe that he's rather talking about the places where the wall is lower, those areas behind the wall where the sun is shining upon them, just because there's not enough height on the wall to provide shade. What we're talking about is very exposed places around the wall. And because low, more vulnerable to the assault of the enemies. So there's something we can take from that. In the truth, we have a responsibility to consider the vulnerable aspects and even the vulnerable people of the truth. As far as the vulnerable people are concerned, we're told that we're to strengthen the feeble knees. We're to lift up the hands which hang down. To think about those who are in times of trouble, who may be slipping away, drifting from the path of life. We're to especially think of those people, the more vulnerable. And we must recognise where the truth at large is more vulnerable. What are the vulnerable spots, the exposed spots in our wall building? We could give an exhortation on that alone, I suppose, but we've got to think about some of the things which might face us, the issues of worldliness, indifference, apathy, supineness, self-centeredness, inattention to reading, many other things which can be exposed spots which can leave us vulnerable and open for the world to creep in at any time into the ecclesia. We must strengthen the things that remain and are ready to die. And like those Israelites, we must put on the whole armour of God. We read that they had a full array of equipment, military equipment. And here's our rallying call. We read, remember Yahweh, which is great and terrible. This must be our battle standard from verse 14. Be not ye afraid of them. Remember Yahweh, which is great and terrible. And if we would remember this and really believe it, we would know that all our affairs are in his hands, and there's no cause ever really for us to be afraid, even though things can come upon us which we might not expect. In the grand scheme of things, they all work together for good. Remember, as it was said by Elisha, there be more with us than there be with them. Verse 70 we read, they which builded the wall and bear burdens, they worked one hand with trowels and the other hand with a weapon. So in one hand they had the instruments of warfare, and in the other they had the building apparatus. We must also at one time be concentrated on the building up of the work of God, and at the same time must be ready to do battle and to be valiant for the things of God. We must always have that sword of the Spirit at our side. We must always be ready to wield it against the wiles of the diabolos as they appear in ourselves, in the ecclesia, and around us. And we can never relax. There are enemies all around us. We might not realize it. They might not be threatening to do physical warfare against us like in the time of Nehemiah, but at the same time, all around us there is the battle for the warfare and the control of our beings and of our minds and our thoughts and our actions. And they were ready for the sound of the trumpet in verse 20. When they heard the sound of the trumpet, they were to resort together and be ready to fight. In the same way, we must be ready for the calling. It is at the sound of the trumpet that the angels will go forth and gather the elect from the four corners of the earth. We must also be in readiness for that calling, which could come to us any time. On verse 19, Brother Grocott made a very interesting, pertinent point on the fact that the work was great and large, and they were separated upon the wall, far from another. He said, how true is that of our position today, and how important that we do as they did and keep in close contact for mutual encouragement and defence. Part of that is what we're doing here, sat together under this tabernacle, all of us focusing together, unitedly, upon the things of the Spirit. When we depart, we must strive to keep contact one with another, to remember one another as we depart in various communication means. We must not forget one another as we depart from this place. Verse 21, it says, we laboured for the work, and half of them held spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. It was an all-day thing. Usually, once the sun is on its way down, the people would stop. But no, they worked beyond that until the stars appeared. So every bit of light they could get, they used it in the building of the wall. Do we really think of our work in the truth like this? All our time being given to the truth. Of course, that involves sometimes doing things like going to work. We have to do it, but we must remember why we're doing it. And at the core of all our endeavours must be the desire to please God, to glorify His name, and to prepare ourselves for His kingdom. And in verse 22, the people were to stay within Jerusalem. A similar lesson that we get from the time when the angel of death passed over Israel in the time of the Passover. Everyone was to stay within the house. If they left the house, they were in danger when the angel of death passed over. And like those people in Israel then and in the time of Nehemiah, we also must realize that the ecclesia is our refuge. And when we leave the confines of the ecclesia, when we explore the world and go out and see what's going on in the fashion of Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, we're in very much great danger. And so, in summary from this chapter, some of the things we can learn. When opposition confronts us, or difficulty, and we know it will, we must take the matter to Yahweh in prayer. We must strengthen our resolve. We must remember God and that He's greater than any foes. We must be in a state of readiness and watchfulness. We must work together unitedly for the common good. We must be armed with the whole armour of God. We must continue steadfastly and resolutely day and night in God's work without lapse or remission. We must have a mind to the work, a focus on the coming glory. I'd just like to conclude with a thought from Zechariah, who was speaking at the time of the exile's return, and speaking at the time of Ezra. He said in Zechariah 4 verse 7, who art thou, O great mountain, that mountain of opposition? Before Zerubbabel thou shalt become a plain. The kingdom of men depicted by the great mountain, all the antagonism to the work of God, all the foes which many of us may have faced, the nations at large who know not God and believe not His gospel and refuse to conform to His precepts will be dashed as a potter's vessel. that great mountain shall become a plain, and the earth shall be given to the class of Nehemiah, who have worked day and night in God's work. And so, with our minds to the work, let us rise up and build.